This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. It's hard to imagine an industry that's changing faster than the IT industry. And because the IT industry is changing so fast, and publishing must change with it, the publishing industry today is a bit like Paul Simon and his buddy Julio. You know, those two kids down in the schoolyard who didn't know where they were headed.
And I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where.
Charlottesville's Jane Friedman hasn't just studied the publishing revolution. She's been in its trenches, and she's poised to help a newly imagined Virginia Quarterly Review complete its leap into the world of digital publishing, whatever that world turns out to be.
See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Tell me what you do at the VQR.
I'm the web editor, which means I oversee all of the online content, any digital initiatives, anything related to putting something online or in digital form. That's my job.
And how is that different from the editor? What are the different parameters?
Right, that's a fabulous question. I think a lot of publications are struggling with that. I think traditionally the editor is someone who plans the content, edits the content for print. But I think it's making less and less sense to distinguish between content you're editing for print versus online. So in one sense, I take the print content and format it for online and digital use.
Simply format it.
Formatting it or converting it, making it appropriate for distribution regardless of the device.
But technologically rather than content.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So I do like the technical side of that, taking print content and, you know, adapting it properly. But I also source content that's online only, and I do all of the social media, which is almost a form of content in itself. So, but, you know, if the editor isn't really thinking about the online digital side of things and how the magazine, what the magazine's identity is, regardless of medium, I mean, that's bad. They shouldn't just be focused on print. So since VQR is still running a search for an editor, I mean, I don't really know how myself and the editor are going to talk about content, print versus online, or where they come together. I mean, it's an interesting question we're going to have to answer.
I hope you're on the search committee.
I am. Yes.
This is good. Years ago, I did a piece for NPR that was entitled, What is a Magazine? And the question was, how online and print related and which drove the content?
Right.
And I got a lot of very well-verbalized abba-dabba-ing. And it seems to me that you are right at the center of a communication revolution.
Yes. Yes.
Does it feel like that when you go to work in the morning?
It does. I mean, I feel it acutely. Like, it's this kind of stuff that keeps me up at night when I consider where VQR is in that kind of arc of revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to keep up sufficiently to survive. Not that I think we're going to be shut down. But every publication
yes.
has to be thinking about this and has to be taking risks.
Okay. How long have you been there at the VQR?
About 7 or 8 months.
Okay. Long enough to get some sense of the magazine's history,
mm-hmm.
right? So how would you, as the brand new online editor,
yeah.
Describe the arc of this really proud publication?
I mean, it's always been a very strong, valued, respected publication for literature. And the subtitle is actually a National Journal for Literature and Discussion. And, you know, since its beginnings in the 1920s, it's been a really important forum for poetry and fiction and book reviews. I mean, we've published Nobel Prize winners and Pulitzer Prize winners and so many wonderful authors. We've been publishing Joyce Carol Oates, you know, I think since the 60s. So we have this amazing archive of literary content. And I would say it was only within the last roughly 10 to 15 years that, you know, the revolution, the digital revolution, was starting to play a part in any publication like VQR. And the interesting thing, too, is that around 2010, my predecessor, he did some very interesting experiments and did some EPUB versions of the journal.
This is Waldo Jagwith.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So you know, things didn't go so well after 2010. And so there's been this 2 years of rebuilding, essentially. And a lot has changed in those 2 years. So it's not like I can pick up exactly where he left off. Things are changing too fast to just adopt a plan that was developed in 2010. I am referencing like the entire publishing industry and how digital has changed.
Really big picture change.
So like thinking about the rise of tablets, it's just in the last 2 years, so much has changed in that area.
Now, what difference does that make from where you sit? Why do tablets matter in how you present the Virginia Quarterly Review online?
I would say I'm going to steal a term from The Economist, which is one of the really progressive publications in this area. And they did this report that they called Lean Back 2.0. And what they argue is that when you're at a desktop or a laptop, like at the office, you're kind of in lean forward mode. You're discovering things, you're working, you're multitasking. But when you get, say, at home or when you're commuting, you're in lean back mode, probably with a tablet, maybe with a phone, and you're actually doing immersive reading. And this actually mimics my behavior. I know that this doesn't describe everybody, but I think what they're the trend they're describing is true. So that you want to have your publication available on those devices and available during those times when people are ready to be immersed in a text. And since the Virginia Quarterly Review is known for long-form journalism, publishing very in-depth pieces, we want to be on those platforms where people are likely, most likely, to lean back and really dive into our content. They're probably not going to do it on a website. Maybe, but it's less likely.
So you're after readers who would read you online essentially the way they would read you in print.
Right.
It's just a different delivery system.
Yes.
How about when you're originating content, does how you edit the actual piece differ from how this non-existent right now print editor will look at it? Are you looking at it in different ways with different language at all?
No, not from on a line-by-line level or how a story is told, I'm not really looking at it any differently. There are certainly pieces of multimedia that might come into the picture that complement a piece on a tablet that you obviously can't put into the print edition. And you can see examples of what this looks like. It's still a very emerging way to tell a story. I don't think anyone's quite nailed it, but last December, the New York Times put out a story called Snowfall, which was a multimedia feature describing what happened during a major avalanche. And as you read through the story, pieces of multimedia would appear on the screen that complemented what was happening right as you were reading that particular section. So like when you would come to a particular character in the story, a little profile box would appear and you could click on it to find out more about that person.
Or not, if
or
you
not.
Just wanted to get on with the story.
Exactly.
Hey, when you read this, what was your personal, professional, whatever reaction?
Well, I thought it was a marvelous use of multimedia, but my big confession is that because I only viewed it on my desktop, I never really read the full story.
Okay.
And I, you know, I did kind of scan it on a tablet, but I was looking at it from a professional, you know, standpoint and not as interested in the story as how they were melding the...
Do you think I can learn from this?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot to learn there. On the other hand, that story took tremendous resource. I mean, they put that piece together, I think, over 6 or 7 months.
Yeah, with lots of people.
With lots of people. And there were ads inserted into it in a kind of a clumsy way. In fact, if there was any criticism of it at all, it was, you know, why couldn't they have done better with the ad placement? But I don't think anyone's cracked that nut. I mean, you can hardly fault them. So, yeah, it was interesting to learn from because I think, and I'll go on a tangent here, Amy O'Leary, who works at the New York Times and sits on VQR's board of advisors, I heard her speak about this very interesting philosophy of using multimedia in storytelling, and it's that you use the multimedia at pivot points in the story when that piece of media is really essential to maybe understanding what's happening, or it can do it better than the writer could express in words. And I think when you look at the multimedia version of Snowfall, and you see the map of how the people are coming down the mountain with the different colored lines, it really shows you, you know, minute by minute, how things were unfolding, which is very hard to kind of keep track of on just
the text.
Just
on the page or on the screen.
Right.
We'll link to that, you know, so people can take a look at exactly what you're talking about. Okay, here you are working in the publishing industry that is completely reinventing itself across all platforms, magazines, books, whatever. How did you end up on the digital side? Life story time.
Well, from a very young age, I was more interested in technology, perhaps, than other kids my age. By the time I was 10 or 11, I was begging my mother to buy me a computer. Okay. So I had this Radio Shack computer called a Tandy, which I immediately broke. I think I totally wiped out the hard drive, not realizing what I was doing, and then had to take it back to the store to be fixed. And so I was always very fascinated by technology.
Why? What fascinated you about it?
I don't know. It was a very creative, expressive tool to me. But beyond that, I don't know. It's very much innate.
But that's interesting that you see it as a creative tool in itself, not a facilitator of other kinds of creativity. Is that too strong?
I think it's both.
But for you, you thought, oh, this is my medium.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, very much so.
Over the past decade or so, Jane Friedman has made herself into something of a social media and web publishing guru for today's flummoxed journalists and writers, of which I am one.
That's right.
I had an internship while I was still in college with a company called F&W Publications, which is where I ended up working.
And they publish?
And they publish many things, including Writer's Digest, some other things that people might be familiar with, HAL Magazine or Print Magazine, and the Artist Magazine. They're known as an enthusiast publisher. So, you know, I didn't really do much on the tech side.
During your internship?
During my internship. In fact, the company was a tiny bit backward. It was family-owned, and the family was not terribly, they weren't embracing technology,
yes.
You might say.
It was a struggle for those of us of a certain age just to wrap our tiny little minds around it.
But, you know, for better or worse, the family sold the company, and the new owners were more forward-thinking in that way. Still, though, my position in publishing didn't really involve technology, probably until social media came along. I would say I first became acutely aware in 2006.
What made you become acutely aware?
I read a profile in The New Yorker of Facebook. And this was at a time when Facebook was just beginning to open up to people outside of the college environment.
Yes.
And so the first thing I did is I went straight to Facebook and created an account. But nobody I knew was there. I was not in college any longer. So it was kind of like just deserted from my perspective. I did have an account on MySpace, but MySpace to me was just kind of, I found it juvenile. But Facebook was clean, beautifully designed. It seemed to have all of this interesting potential. But I couldn't do anything with it because no one I knew
You didn't have
was
any
on
friends.
It. Yeah, no friends.
That's right. I really want to chat with you. Cause you got a nice look. Yes, you do. You know, on a Facebook. As soon as you can, I'll be in the net soon. You know, you boy, man. I really wanna chat with you, Shawty. Cause you got a nice look. Yes, you do. You know, on a Facebook. As soon as you can, I'll be in the net soon. You know, you boy, man. Yeah, girl.
Back after a break to talk more with the Virginia Quarterly Review's new web editor and social media maven, Jane Friedman. So how did online sites and social media worm their way into the fabric of how we do almost everything these days? As we heard back before the break, Jane Friedman, the Virginia Quarterly Review's new web editor, was aware of social media way back when it was still mostly a college campus oddity. And the story of how Jane worked online stuff into the fabric of her then magazine, Writer's Digest, mirrors the web's steady march to prominence in our lives. Jane Friedman essentially invented her magazine's web presence while moving up the ranks at Writer's Digest.
Tweet. Twitter. By the time social media really took off, I had become the community leader for the brand. And basically that means I was in charge of not just the magazine, but the book line and the events and the competitions and the online offerings.
So you were a big dog.
I was a big dog, yes.
Did you have that on your desk? Jane Friedman, big dog?
There was a poster that some of my editors made that said, "What would Jane Friedman do?" Which was very flattering and cute. I had wonderful colleagues at Writer's Digest. I was very fortunate. And, you know, so it was up to me to lead the brand. And in some ways, I was a lead marketer and, you know, a lead content director and a lead on the online front, because all the people who executed on that were under me.
So you were really the lead formulator of how to look at social media, online, everything, and make it a part of this company's brand.
Right, exactly. And the other thing that was just kind of given to me that I had no part in that also helped was Writer's Digest was one of the first brands at F&W Publications to have a really strong online presence, which it was started in roughly 2001. And we had an online education division that really picked up at that time. And it was also around that year that
Only online, not as an online backup.
Correct.
Okay.
So there was something called the Writer's Digest School, which was a correspondence school. And the people at F&W were smart enough to realize they needed to take that online. It was a brilliant move, had a lot of foresight there to do that. And they also had a lot of foresight in looking at the big directory that is published by Writer's Digest called Writer's Market, which is like this huge telephone book.
The Bible.
Yes, the Bible. You know, 10,000 listings of everywhere you can get
published. I have
published.
A copy.
Yeah, a lot of people do. And it's kind of unwieldy, and
yes.
It goes out of date really quickly.
Yes.
So in 2001, or roughly about that time, it all got digitized, and there was an online subscription made available. So when I started working at Writer's Digest kind of at that seminal moment, and then by the time, you know, 2007, 2008, when I was in charge of everything, there were already these really well-established online pieces of this brand that were, you know, we had a lot of audience online already. And so then it's like, how do we capitalize on this? How do we mobilize it? How do we develop a community, online community around the brand? And social media was the natural step.
Were you enjoying yourself at this point?
I was.
Why?
I think it was a lot of fun because the values that I held matched the values of all of the people I was working with closely.
Which were,
we want to educate, inform, and have fun with the community of writers. That was really all we wanted to do. And all of us, or most of us, were in some way, we felt like we were a writer ourselves or somehow invested in the publishing industry. And so everything we did came back to, how does this solve the problem of the writer? And it was fun to solve those problems together and come up with ideas. And I think the other piece of it is, after having been in publishing and with the brand so long, you just develop this intuition and knowledge and expertise that makes it, you know, it's very gratifying to use that.
You feel as though you do what you do well.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, which is very gratifying, I think. How is your relationship with digital media and with social media changing during this time, or perhaps I should say growing?
Yeah.
You were making it up as you went along,
oh,
I'm sure.
Totally making it up. I had no idea where it was really leading.
Yeah.
But I wanted to experiment. And I would say around 2007, 2008 is when Facebook began to really pick up. It's when I started to notice Twitter. I joined Twitter in 2008. And at the same time that I would personally join these sites, I would also, by default, create an account for Writer's Digest. Whether or not I planned on using it, I really didn't know at that point, you know, what would happen. But let's just create
it. What Writer's Digest would tweet.
Exactly. And, you know, because my motivations, and I don't want to sound like arrogant, but because my motivations were pretty authentic, I just wanted to serve writers and use these tools in a way that matched the philosophy of the brand. I think that's why we did so well. I mean, we weren't out there with the hard sell.
You weren't hustling. You were really trying to figure this out.
Yeah. Yeah. And so slowly over time, we did develop a really strong presence on Facebook and on Twitter and through other outlets that we had, like our email newsletter. And I was also developing in parallel my own platform on Twitter and Facebook and
for
other
you personally.
For myself personally.
Yeah. And why? Why did you want to do that?
Well, while it was a fun job, I realized that eventually I was going to have to get out for a lot of reasons. And I didn't...
Any you want to go into?
Well, I would say it went back to the values question.
Okay.
Where I felt like there was a growing gap between what I wanted to do and what I thought was right and what the people above me wanted to do.
Can you talk a little bit about where the gap came? You don't have to criticize anybody.
Right.
Just what you wanted to do that you felt like you might have to take somewhere else in order to be able to do it?
I think it was more about how the company, in its efforts to stay viable and nimble, I think they wanted to make more money as quickly as possible and create products that didn't particularly solve anyone's problem, but would only just make as much money as quickly as possible.
And so, you really invested personally.
Yes.
In this idea of
yes.
being a part of a solution to the many problems faced by the community
yeah.
of writers.
Yes, exactly. And that's when I began to develop my own platform that I felt was not necessarily Jane Friedman, the publisher of Writer's Digest, but Jane Friedman, a trusted resource for writers or someone who knows digital media and content strategy. So I would say it was around late 2008 that I got serious about that and launched my own website. And I had a blog with Writer's Digest that really helped that platform grow. And around, let's see, I think it was 2011, I finally moved it over to my own site.
And with their blessing?
Well, that's an interesting dynamic there. They kept my blog going with the same name, but it wasn't by me anymore.
Okay.
It was by the editors.
You kind
remaining.
Of became an Aunt Jemima or Betty Crocker.
Most of my writing is online writing, like for blogs or online publications. I do a little bit of other types of writing, but it's usually only when someone comes and says, would you write X?
And why have you chosen that platform for you to express yourself?
I think that for the things that I'm writing about, if I just look at it from the professional writing that I do, things change too fast, I think, for me to write something that ought to be published in print. Like the industry changes so quickly and there are so many variables and there are so many other questions to be answered, like in the comments when people say, well, but what about this? I think online is a much more natural forum for the things that I want to share.
It's always more fun to share with everyone.
Lots of links to articles as well as to Jane Friedman's own very writer-friendly website on the Spark page at WMRA.org.
It's always more fun to share with everyone.